Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and this is a special May the 4th episode as we dive into the wonderful world of Star Wars. I am joined by our intern manager, Amy.
Hello.
As we're going to take on this particular episode, and this is going to be a little bit different than normal as we are going to curtail this episode more so around the conversation of what has been popping up in theaters as of late, and that is the 20th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith. Yes. This is going to be a pared down episode, like I said, and it's going to be much more focused on that as we celebrate the 20th anniversary and we talk about our kind of focus of it from then and where we're at with it now. So before we dive into all that, though, Amy, why don't you give us them? Well, why don't you try to give us them opening credits?
Yeah. Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week.
Now on all your favorite streaming platforms and over at our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101 and on Blue Sky at filmlosophers podcast.
We're going to have to talk to Spencer about how that one went. I don't know. We'll see. But yes, we have a website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers and give us a follow or subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have. Please give us a 5-star review.
That's right. And if you have any thoughts on any episode, please drop us a line in the towel section below. We love reading those and we love hearing your thoughts. And of course, we'll give you more of the social links at the end of the episode. Like I said, this is a very special episode as we are going to be diving into the recently re-released variation of the Star Wars film that we're going to be talking about. But again, as you noticed, we do not have Mr. Spencer Williams with us today. As Spencer told us, and I quote, he has something better to do.
Hey, no. It's more we can, much like we have Star Trek month, this is very Star Warsy. And while he does have some understanding, some knowledge of the Star Wars universe, it's more kind of like less of a passion project.
I wouldn't put it in those terms. I would just say Spencer was unavoidably detained at this time.
Wow, that's so, kind of sketchy.
No, unavoidably detained. He had some obligations he had to take care of. I mean, Spencer's a fan of all these fandoms as much as we are. The thing is, there were certain things that, in all honesty, there were certain things that kept him from being able to record. Mm-hmm. So I am here with intern manager or manager intern, however you want to put
managing
it, Amy.
Managing intern, we don't know.
And this is the thing. We are testing new waters with this role for Amy. And mind you, she has been with us for a good amount of time. However, that doesn't mean that you got to stop putting in the effort. And we still have yet to get that coffee every episode.
There's an expectation every episode.
There's always been an expectation.
No, see, since I was promoted, HR said that I can delegate down for that coffee run to the other interns because I am manager/managing intern. Which means more power, more responsibility.
That's not what they told me. I mean, I have it on writing. So anyway,
I'd love to see a copy of that for records, you can, please.
Yeah, it'll be in the mail in 500 to 1,000 business days. So,
100 business days. But I'll keep a track of that.
But honestly, one of the bright points about having this conversation is Amy is also a huge fan and a absolute nerd about Star Wars and the fandom, as well as myself. And so it'll be fun to dive into this as we get into our discussion of the 20th anniversary re-release of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith. This is a film that honestly, if you're looking at probably that original trilogy, this was actually the high point for the entire storyline that it created, and ultimately served as the catalyst for what we ultimately came to know when it comes to either the Rogue One story, also the Rebels animated series. You also have plenty of lore in between. We have shows that are kind of based in that area as well as the Andor series that's in its second season as we speak. And then not to mention tons of the fan fiction, as well as comics and books and so forth. So as we dive into this, Amy, why don't you go ahead, since Spencer is not here, and read us that official synopsis goodness.
Sure, I'll make an attempt. It has been 3 years since the Clone Wars began, and Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi and his Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker rescued Chancellor Palpatine from General Grievous, the commander of the droid armies. But Grievous escapes. Suspicions are raised when the Jedi Council concerning Chancellor Palpatine, with whom Anakin has formed a bond, asked to spy on the Chancellor, and full of bitterness towards the Jedi Council, Anakin embraces the dark side. There was no, like, sentence that connected the suspicions are raised with the...
Are you done? Yeah, that was a whole... I don't know if that was synopsis goodnesses.
It wasn't goodness.
Written and directed by George Lucas. Film stars Hayden Christensen, Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, Samuel L. Jackson, Ian McDiarmid, Jimmy Smits, Frank Oz, Anthony Daniels, Sir Christopher Lee, as well as a slew of other folks within this whole entire Star Wars universe. This particular film, as we stated, has reached its 20th anniversary point. And again, we have been celebrating it throughout the course of the last week it's been in theaters. And if you hadn't had a chance to see it when it first released, you can have a chance to see it right now. Currently, I believe it'll still be playing for a couple more days.
I hope so. I mean, it would make sense for it to go through the rest of May the 4th.
Oh, I don't know. That's kind of the intern's job to research.
No, that wasn't.
But like I said, this movie is absolutely one of the quintessential films of that original trilogy. Amy, so when this film came out, do you recall when you first saw it? Did you see it around its opening time?
I saw it in open because this came out, and since it's 20 years, it would be 2005. And I was...
Great math there.
Yeah, the easy math. I love me some round numbers.
I would hope so. It's 20th anniversary.
It
does say it was released May 19th, so this month, 20 years ago.
So, yeah, it's still good. I was a senior in graduating high school, so I actually went to the midnight showing for this one. And I remember, because it was an actual midnight showing, it was not a 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, now that we get them, I'm not complaining, just saying midnight was midnight. And I lined up and I actually watched it, and I remember having a very different opinion from that viewing. Not just like the viewing experience itself was fantastic. The crowd, midnight crowds, you cannot replace them. They're diehard fans. We still had somebody dressed as Darth Maul that was out in my line that was doing flips and like lightsaber work, which was cool and weird. And then on viewing it again 20 years later, there's some things that I was like, yep.
So are you saying that it's been 20 years since the last time you've seen it?
Oh, no.
Okay, so because that's exactly what you just said. So I'm just...
The most recent viewing has been within the last like week, couple weeks, like two maybe. But prior to that, Well, what about you then?
So I saw every single prequel film in theaters. Mm-hmm. It was a mandatory thing in my household, as both my parents are avid Star Wars fans, and had been for as long as obviously I was alive. In fact, most of my family are Star Wars fans, and I had cousins who like religiously collected the Kenner toys. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing, like they would bring them to, when they would visit, they would bring them in their large boxes, like the collector clamshell things, and they would have them all in there. I never really got into collecting their toys because the mentality was if you collect them, you either had to buy two, one to play and one to show. And my parents were just like, yeah, we're not going to do that. But I do remember like usually getting like the occasional lightsaber every now and then. Mm. So
you actually got lightsabers.
It's one of those like telescopic ones where you like thrust lightsaber. It forward and it all of a sudden became a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. No innuendo there. But when the prequel trilogy came out, I was not front row, but I was one of the first in line to see the midnight showings. Obviously the first two films I saw while I was in Texas, while I was still out there. And I remember seeing it at the Cielo Vista 18 theater every time one came out. And then this one I actually saw when I was out. The next year when I was out here. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it on the south side of town. And the thing is, back then, the fandom was different back then. Sure. If you're looking at 20 years ago,
they're grown children now for 20 years ago.
But like the fandom is so much different than where it used to be. There's like quite literally a nexus point for when the transition happened, where you started bringing in the younger crowd. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it was when the first Dave Filoni Clone Wars film came out. The Clone Wars animated film that came out
Filoni's animated.
Which then spun off to a whole series. Mm-hmm. But when that came out, that set the tone for everything, because ultimately the Clone Wars series came out after Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, I mean, Filoni's did, but we also had this conversation previously, mm-hmm. where it was Genndy Tartakovsky's
came Tartakovsky.
Out. Tartakovsky. I keep saying Tartakovsky.
If you're gonna get it right,
But his came out in 2003 and actually was literally, now I believe Disney Plus has called it the micro series, but basically it's a small enough pocket that it actually explains the buildup that happens between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And it actually leads into the open of Revenge of the Sith, which happened in 2003. This came out in 2005. And then Filoni's series and movie came out and started in 2008.
In 2008, mm-hmm. Yeah. And mind you, like, as soon as that series became a thing, you now had given access to the Star Wars universe to a younger demographic. Ultimately it was on, you know,
Cartoon Network. Disney XD and Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I was going to say it was more so because the Genndy Tartakovsky one started on the Cartoon Network one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Dave Filoni's originally started on Disney XD, I mean on Cartoon Network, or it was on Disney XD. I believe it was on Disney XD because of who had the rights technically.
Yeah.
So there's a there's a huge, you know, kind of dialogue as to which one is the true telling of the story that happened between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. I don't know if you've heard, and I may have mentioned it once or twice to you. I don't know if you've heard of the film theory about those two films.
I'm giving you an eyebrow because, huh?
Well, I'm also looking at you on your phone, and I'm like, "Come on, there's just two of us here. I can't throw it to Spencer."
Trying to find where it had started, like for Filoni's, but no, I don't think you've told me any of your.
Ultimately, it starts in the same place that most of them do, in the midst of the war.
Yeah,
I mean, so there's really no other point to go from there, really. But there's a theory that in this theory, the films operate as like a what would you say, it's like they operate as within the actual known universe for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like they actually are
in
the universe, and what they are is the theory is Genndy Tartakovsky's film is the true telling of the story of the Clone Wars, and Filoni's is propaganda. Because of the fact that it creates so much Filoni's work, which, again, a quick note, this is not a slight on Filoni's work. Filoni has absolutely reinvigorated the Star Wars fandom and has done great work. I'm just merely stating the fan theory.
No, it's a great fan theory because the two of them are so distinct in not only their storytelling, in their design as a whole.
Yeah.
And well, how they approach very
well, like, the biggest, so okay, let me finish explaining before you start mansplaining it to me, okay?
I'm sorry, I'm a lady. I'll ladiesplain this all day.
Which is just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
So the theory postulates that the Filoni one is the propaganda version of the story put out by the Empire so that people can create sentiment and a sense of when they feel for the clones.
I mean, empathy?
Yes. They feel empathy for the clones and for those that fought on that side and what had happened. It creates more of a connection with those of the clones, mm-hmm. and the troopers altogether,
mm-hmm.
And makes more of this empathetic feel for, oh, well, they had to go through this because, you know, they had Cody and Rex and there was all these, this and that. Whereas Jendi's version, mm-hmm. is a little bit more militaristic. It's a little bit more focused on the brutality of the war rather than so much of the relationships there within. And that one is the one that's supposed to be put out by the rebels, which is why the Filoni one carried off and created a series by the Empire, because it created more of that camaraderie feel with the clones and so forth.
Yeah, well, and it might be sympathy. I can never get sympathy and empathy correct. So either way,
sympathy probably is the right better word.
Better word.
It's it's late. We're having this conversation.
We're literally, it's Boonta Eve, and we went to the Boonta Eve race. Like, this is how we're celebrating our May the 4th. I can see a bit of both. I mean, in watching Jendi's Clone Wars or Micro, whatever they want to call it.
Just call it what it is. It's the Clone Wars movie.
Yeah, it's the Clone Wars, and it's chapters. And it was literally like maybe at a max 5 minutes. It's like 25. They put it 25 chapters, but it's literally like 2.5 hours, almost three. It's not a lot. But the only trooper that's actually named is Cody. Everybody else is just troopers, and they are very static. It gives more credence and understanding in that series that the troopers are just there. They don't have a purpose. They pull entirely the humanity out of the troopers and treat them almost essentially as droids. But that's also where we get into that weird spot of like things that Filoni's other work has covered and other people within the Star Wars universe of droids.
Yeah, but in that same mindset, a lot of the lore that has thus been created has been as a response to Filoni's already established work. So most of what people have then created and has carried over into actual canon has been based on everything that he's established in the Clone Wars already. Like the whole conversation about, oh, Rex is in the Return of the Jedi film. You can see him in this one scene. That wasn't postulated until after the show became a hit and the Bad Batch, you got, you know, all of this information, and people wanted to know, like, oh, whatever happened to Rex? Rex should still be around. Oh, this is Rex in this film. It's right here. And obviously they came out and they were like, oh, you know what? You're actually right. The Star Wars, you know, the Star Lucas Films has confirmed that Rex is actually a part of the group of rebels that are over there trying to take over during the Battle of Endor.
Well, and that's the other thing that when you say, so the sentiment towards droids, and we want to have that conversation, was actually was established canonically when we meet Anakin in episode one. But also when we start furthering it along through the rest of the series, we can see that the droid sentiment is shifting. And so when we get to Filoni, all Filoni does is expand on it, because I'm thinking of Caravan of Courage even there. And the fact that like 4 through 6, we see so many more, like the droid sentiment when we're looking at, you know, the original trilogy is very mixed, where you can kind of get it. Okay, during the Clone Wars, the droids were the quote unquote bad people. But then you have 3PO, you have R2, you have KT or QT, you have like the difference between the gonk droids and the mouse, and like you have so many other droids that you start to see.
But even in that, like, it's not really fully established as like, I don't think that there is much of a stronger importance of the personality within the droids themselves that hasn't been fully kind of spelled out there until we get to the series of Clone Wars, which then translates as well into the series of Rebels.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately, yes, we know, everybody knows of the sassy droid R2-D2. Everybody knows of the protocol droid C-3PO. There's really no other droid that you see throughout the entire 4 through 6 and 1 through 3 that really stands out from those films, from the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy.
That has a fully fleshed out speaking role and personality.
Well, no, that I mean, because technically R2-D2 doesn't have a speaking role. He just noises and blips.
His noises, but, and he talks to Anakin. Don't play that
but,
game.
Well, I mean, technically there's a whole lore to that that I don't even want to get into, because it's in the same vein of, you know, of Chewbacca, because Chewbacca's, if you ever look at the original scripts, and I actually have a copy of the Empire Strikes Back script in my office, Chewbacca actually has lines that are written there, so that way Harrison Ford's Han Solo can react and respond
and
accordingly.
Talk to Peter Mayhew when he was yelling.
But what I was saying is, not even so much as like a talking, speaking role, but a personality.
A defined personality.
Yeah, we don't really have a lot of that in there. Like, the closest thing we probably have is the eyeball, you know, guard droid from Return of the Jedi, you know, yeah, that guards Jabba's palace. I mean, that's the only other thing I can think of. But there's not much that's built out outside of that until, again, we get to the Filoni-verse that allows, you know, a little bit more creative liberty within not only the canon universe between 2 and 3, but then also spins off for Rebels, as well as, you know, other opportunities such as like The Mandalorian, the Ahsoka series, the Obi-Wan series,
Lesser Book of Boba series,
the Book of Boba series. So I feel like, because of the implications that have then kind of been created by the Filoni-verse, the propaganda.
You're prospering from the propaganda. Let's call the spade a spade. Star Wars fans have been eating good. Like, even as they're complaining, they have a buffet. We haven't even hit Tales of the Jedi, the Visions,
Tales of the Sith. Yep.
Like, let's, and we can.
Isn't there one's off, Visions?
Or? Yeah, Visions, and there's Visions 2. There's, like, to a lesser extent, Skeleton Crew. You brought up Bad Batch, which has more than a couple of seasons. It has been a veritable smorgasbord for the smorgasbord or smorgasborg?
Smorgasbord.
Okay, I can never get that right.
Smorgasbord.
Thank you, Swedish chef.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. It has been a veritable feast for Star Wars fans since Filoni has kind of jumped 2 feet into that.
Yeah.
And Jon Favreau. We'll give Jon Favreau's due as well. Because really, when we look at everything that happened for that original trilogy, and you talked about it, it was fanfics. It was EU. It was all these other books.
No. It's really quick. No. Yeah, because Star Wars fans will eat you alive if you don't get this correct. It is not EU. It is not fanfic. It is called Legends. So the Legends portion of Star Wars.
But didn't they also, and here's the question that I have, because we're getting deep into the paint on this one. I do understand that it's Legends, but was Legends prior, before it became defined as Legends, what was it?
That's what it's always been.
It's always been Legends.
So it's always been identified as, so think of it this way. Canon is what even if we're looking at prior to episode 1, The Phantom Menace, before this, the entirety of what has been known as the Star Wars quote unquote universe has made up of two different timelines. You have the canon verse, And then you have the Legendsverse. The Legendsverse is
Kodor
the one.
Kodor will be in Legendsverse.
Who?
The Knights of the Old Republic. Comic books.
Yeah, yeah. The Knights of, well, technically no, because yes and no, because it exists, but there wasn't really story built out for it. George Lucas hadn't really done anything. A lot of the legends consisted of like the storyline of Emperor Palpatine and his clones, the storyline of how he is able to, you know, ultimately pull Luke to the dark side and he becomes the next Darth Vader, so to speak. Mm. The storyline of like Mara Jade,
she's becoming canonic now.
No, but previously, like, you know, the assassin that is sent by Palpatine to go and hunt down, you know, there's all these different storylines, not to mention like the offshoots of, you know, who had kids and who didn't, mm-hmm. what their kids were named, the lore of those kids and where they went on. Like, a lot of that story, you know, even in the interpretation of like the Admiral Thrawn, like yeah. that story, like there was whispers and mentions of it, but the Legends portion of this universe is what took off and created. It allowed people to create within the framework of the universe stories that made them feel fulfilled within the knowledge and the joy that they had within the universe. Mm-hmm. So over time, though, Filoni, as well as Favreau, has gone into those, like, the annals of, you know, the Legends storyline. Mm-hmm. And that's how we've gotten access to, again, stories like bringing in Admiral Thrawn, bringing in, like you said, the Knights of the Old Republic, bringing in stories about, you know, Darth Plagueis. At one point in time, Ian McDiarmid just recently said at the Star Wars celebration that he had once approached... I don't know if he had approached Disney or if he had approached Lucas, but he had stated that there was once a conversation about the possibility of a series with him and the storytelling of Darth Plagueis, which would have been interesting. And we wouldn't have been able to, we wouldn't have had to resort to just that mere small little inkling of seeing Plagueis in Acolyte.
Ah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but
a little peek out, and we're like, "Oh, hello."
But yeah, the Legends storyline, the Legends universe is very vast. In fact, it's so vast. Wikipedia, the Star Wars Wikipedia, or the Wookipedia, as it's called, is actually split right down into, and you can actually separate it between what's Legends and what's canon.
Well,
because there's still a lot that's still Legends that hasn't been made into canon yet.
Well, and there's some of it also that has both tags. So if you open people like Master Shakti, so that was one of the things that I was really excited about. We see her canonically in live action and then like in the actual movies, but we also see her in Jendi's Clone Wars. And I saw her and I was like, who is this? And then they gave her a name. And if you looked on the Wikipedia, she has it under Legends and canon for both.
And most of them do. Most of them do have two because... Obviously, there's a basis for their character, and then there's the stories that were built upon by passionate people who cared about the franchise. And mind you, there's a whole conversation to that, but we're kind of diverting from the main conversation, which is us talking about Revenge of the Sith. And mind you, we're not going to go into details about the film because obviously we've done that already enough.
It's 20 years. You do have an opportunity if you haven't gone and seen it or just queued it up. Do yourself a favor, celebrate something.
I mean, if you have Disney Plus, all the movies are on Disney Plus, by all means, have at it. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to get into is kind of the mindset of like, okay, so what were some of your first thoughts when you saw the film initially? Like, you were obviously in high school, mm-hmm. you know, do you recall like where your brain was at after you saw that film the first time?
Yeah. There were a couple moments that I distinctly remember having very particular feelings about. Oh my gosh, sorry.
It's not just me who gets the burps. Ha!
Hey.
Yeah.
Vaguely.
And you're a lady.
So the very first one I remember literally just losing my mind over was Padme's funeral procession. I remember absolutely losing my marbles because it looked like a painting. And I think it's called The Drowning of Ophelia. And she looked just like the painting, and it was absolutely gorgeous. And I was like, oh, Natalie Portman, you're killing me. You're literally killing me. But I remember also...
Might be a little much, but okay. I hear you.
Well, she was fantastic. And then I remember the meme, no, I was just like, oh my gosh, this
no.
It was so out of pocket for at that time. It was so out of pocket for me.
No, just period. It's been out of pocket. It's one of those things.
It's so contentious too, because it's like literally you're like, you have James Earl Jones
in
voice.
Your vain anger. You killed her.
It's so meme worthy before the memes were living.
I'm certain at one point in time, like, someone's going to do a special edition, as much as George Lucas has done that for the last few years with his original trilogy, mm-hmm. and someone's going to come in and like just remove that, like,
an angered scream, but there's not a no. Yeah, I mean, you could do that. I remember distinctly being like, okay, that's a little much, dude. And then the, Annie, you're breaking my heart. I can't go where you're going. Like, there were so many moments where I was like, okay, this feels super canned, like super phoned in, super cheesy. But then I was also very aware that I was witnessing history,
mm-hmm.
and having a moment in history that was even more important than how I saw it as a 18 year old kid.
Yeah, I mean you take a look at something like this, where this is the catalyst moment where the one of the most powerful villains in all of cinematic and literary history, so to speak, mm-hmm. in this last century has ultimately been formed by this, you know, the catalyst where he becomes this powerhouse of an entity, you know, this feared being across the universes. And in this moment, like, you see the trajectory of where he's been from episode one, you know, are you an angel? You know, to however that relationship worked out in episode two, but it did. And the sand is a coarse ingredient.
it's everywhere.
And then we get to, you know, episode three, and you see the things that, you know, transpire. And like you said, it was like watching Star Wars history, because, again, growing up, we saw the films religiously, constantly. In our household, I remember episode four. I remember episode five. I remember watching episode six. I remember seeing the holiday special. I remember watching, you know, the Ewok cartoons. Like, I saw all these things. They were regularly watched in my household. And to see the moment where we see the formation of Darth Vader, and that one singular moment where his helmet seals in and you hear like the suction, like a goddamn Tupperware mm-hmm. commercial. And then you just, you hear the first sound of the breathing with the click, and it's like the whole entire. Yeah.
Like, you hear that. And then you hear those final, the John Williams, that final line from the brass where it finishes his theme, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, it is the climax of the entire like prequel.
Well, and then you get you ultimately get the moment where, like, and mind you, this is just from the very first time I saw it. I remember in theaters, I remember sitting there and watching that visor coming onto his face and seeing his vision red, and I hear that click, and I hear the breathing, and I hear his voice, and it is James Earl Jones, mm-hmm. the voice that we haven't heard in that particular role in almost, at that point, what, 15, 20 years. Like, it had been however long since Return of the Jedi, you know, and you have this iconic moment, and you're right, it is history in the making. And it totally, as a Star Wars fan, it totally sent me wild. I remember watching it. And again, this goes back to the statement I was making earlier. Star Wars fans back then were wildly different than where they are now.
Yep.
Because back then, and mind you, I'm not stereotyping at all. I am one of these people. I will always be, as the late great, oh my God, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank. John, the guy from Collider.
I almost said, are you a sweaty?
I was just going to say.
Schnepp.
John Schnepp, that's right. The incredible and late, unfortunately, John Schnepp, who has been a icon in the nerd arena of just, you know, talking about this and being an advocate for nerds all around. He would call all of those types of people, he would call them Schweddies, because, I mean, that's what we were. We were Schweddies for, like, the fandoms that we loved. And being in a theater with a bunch of Schweddies where you had people who were fans of it as older folks, you had fans of it that were our age, you had fans of it that were younger, who were truly just fans of where this universe had begun. And mind you, I'm not taking anything away from the newer generation. I am actually excited for the newer generation. But I am saying, like, that demographic, that grouping there was one of the most unique experiences, because I literally am sitting across and I'm seeing folks that are well into their like 40s, 50s, you know, almost 60s. And there are people that are my age that are watching it that are just so enthralled with it. And it's like this one singular moment where, you know, merchandising and the high cost of capitalism hadn't gotten in the way yet. Mm-hmm. And it was just about the love of the fandom itself. Yeah. And it was a special moment, because there were people that were crying. There were people that were like, screaming. Yes, there were people that were screaming. There were people that, as soon as you heard James Earl Jones's voice, which, because they weren't doing AI back then, so it was legitimately James Earl Jones.
Yep.
You know, it was magnificent, you know, and it's crazy how perspectives shift and grow as you grow, mm-hmm. because we're talking about how this is hitting its 20th anniversary. And I cannot tell you how much my perspective has changed on a few things when it comes to this movie.
Yeah.
Like I have now that, you know, I'm a dad, and now that, you know, I, you know, with being a little older now, say a little, not too much, like your perspective completely changes on certain elements. And with everything, as we mentioned earlier, with Dave Filoni and what he's done, it has now added more context to how much some of the scenes that happen in Revenge of the Sith, how much they actually hold importance to.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many different things to touch upon. Like, for instance, after, and mind you, I've been telling Amy, and she hasn't yet, but hopefully she will soon. She needs to finish the Clone Wars series.
Hey, I'm in season 5. Yeah. Okay. There's 7.
Yeah.
I have been going through this.
When did this series start?
Oh, 2008, but yeah, I wasn't watching TV for most of that, which is a problem. But like, even then, I had one big hurdle, and I'm going to deviate very quickly so we can have conversation about Revenge of the Sith, because I want to talk about changing perspective. In the open with the narrator and the old timey war on blah blah blah. Like it used to be, and it's very something that is difficult for me to get over. I had the same problem with Legends of Korra.
Does it do that at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah. No, I'm not.
I'm talking about the Clone Wars series.
Yeah. It was such a turnoff to me that I was like, I don't, no, thank you.
Here, let me, another quick aside from before, a slight deviation. What other types of content do you know that do that?
I just literally said Legends of Korra for
Avatar. No. I mean older than that.
Well, radio plays would do a lot of that.
War propaganda videos.
Oh.
The clips that they, when you would be in theaters, like, war changes everybody. In the latest from Italy, blah, blah, blah. It's like,
go that, get them, boys. That's, Uncle Sam's rooting for you. Yeah.
But that also lends itself to the theory that
would explain the Rocketeer too, why I had such a difficulty when he takes his girlfriend to the movie theater. And yeah. There's the, oh my gosh.
So just saying, it adds to the theory, but continue. My bad. Okay.
But yeah, so that was a really big difficult point for me to kind of even get through Clone Wars. And again, I think I just had to give it some time, because first off, the Clone Wars themselves are not all in a linear order. They do
sequential
order. Yeah, sequential order. They hop around, which means that when you're watching them, you can get little pockets where they are linear and they are sequential. But for the most part, you're getting different stories, but it's all happening at the same in the same time period.
Yeah. And mind you, yeah, you're right. There are pockets where like 3 to 4, even 6 to maybe almost 7 episodes are running in a row, but then it'll deviate to something else completely different sometimes. But that's where, I mean, I'm just going to say it again. Once you see the full series, you can go back and, you know, you rewatch.
You can cherry pick. And I think that's part of the thing that with Gendy, and we also have to make mention that Gendy's series does introduce particular characters that straight up translate over to Filoni's.
Yeah.
You're looking at Ventress. You're looking at some of the Masters and the Jedi. You're looking at Cody. You see Count Dooku. He was already
right. Which already was in the second film.
But those characters we do see continue through and are represented in Filoni's. But besides all that, I do really like the Clone Wars for Filoni is really important in having a better, more fleshed out understanding of everything that takes place during the Clone Wars in that pocket that they're like, oh, it's only been 3 years till, you know, he meets General Grievous and and that we come Revenge of the Sith. But yeah, with Revenge of the Sith and our perceptions, our perspectives unchanging while we grow.
Yeah.
It has been something that is whole. It was wholly unexpected to have Filoni's Clone Wars come in and fill in the gaps where when I was if I had access to it in 2005.
You wouldn't have because it wasn't around.
I know. No, I know. But to think of if you're starting your Star Wars journey now,
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Like if you're looking at it. So back in the day, probably
back in the day.
Well, okay, so not too long ago, before the sequel trilogy, there was what was called a way of viewing it called the machete method, which the machete method, what it did was you would watch 4, 5, and then immediately you would transition over to part 2, because technically number 1 at the time didn't really have as much implication and you know, it didn't have a lot that really kind of impressed upon the storyline moving forward. And then obviously you would watch 2, then 3, and then you would go back and watch 6. Because ultimately there's nothing really that tethers 5 and 6 in terms of immediate storyline that really draws, you know, that wouldn't be really impeded upon by a little break.
Yeah.
Now.
There's so much.
The method now goes with, I believe it's Rogue One, 4, 5, 1, 2, and then the Clone Wars series, and then
Rebels. I think this is before Andor too, because Andor's in that pocket as well.
So here's the thing. Now that Andor is a thing, because now this most recent one, it would have technically been Andor, Rogue One, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, Clone Wars, 3, Rebels, Bad Batch, and then into 6.
And then
into The Mandalorian. Because The Mandalorian takes place only a few years after episode 6.
And then Skeleton Crew, if you're honoring Skeleton Crew, would get thrown at the very, very end of that.
That doesn't really...
But then you also have Tales of the Jedi and Tales of the Sith, where you would have to throw Tales of the Jedi.
But that's, again, that's also... Those are... I don't know how canon those stories are. Because, again, those are interpretations of origins that I don't know... If they really are heavy into the canon area, or if they're just expressions,
you might be in the canon area.
Again, they sold books for years of legends.
Yeah, but people are running out, and there are tiki mugs of Ahsoka Tano. There is underpants.
Ahsoka Tano is canon because that's already the fact. Either way, talking about adjusted or amended perspectives. Honestly, when talking about the Filoniverse and everything that he's done, I think one of the first things that immediately stands out to me is, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned it to you or if I saw it first or you saw it, but I feel like the mention of the recognition of not making Anakin a master.
Oh, I brought this up. Because I had watched I had watched Gendy's.
So you
and
had,
they knight him.
Yes,
in Gendy's. And my question had been because, and I even went to the Wikipedia, and then I had double checked with you because it didn't make sense to me.
But a Jedi Knight is under
a master.
And then there's a Grand Master, and then
There's a Grand Master. There's the Knight, like, and Knights can have Padawan learners,
yeah,
or apprentices. They're interchangeable, but they have to be. Initial during the Clone Wars, I came to find out that the council and they were assigning knight, like prior knights could choose to take on a Padawan if they wanted to. And during the Clone Wars, they were just like, you get a Padawan. And so the.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately war rules. I mean, to kind of
fast track everything.
Yeah, everything that you're talking about here. But like the mentality here is that because of the fact that we have extensive historical information based on the Clone Wars series, we know that when Anakin is walking into the council to seek his acceptance as the role and the title of master, we know he's not. So prior to when you first see the original viewing of the prequel trilogy, you're just going from 1, 2, and 3. And so there was so much of this effort of recognizing, oh, Anakin's just this whiny kid. He's just this, you know, he's the emo kid. He's this, is that. He's just wanting things. You know, whatever.
It hurts in my underpants.
But it's like, and so when he comes into this perspective, like when he comes to this situation, you're like, oh, well, why would he, you know, of course, you know, he doesn't get the title of that. He doesn't done anything, whatever. Now that we have the Clone Wars series, this man has ultimately saved most of the people that are sitting on that council at one point in time during war. He has not only changed the trajectory of, you know, the who was winning that war several times with the aid of, you know, Obi-Wan, as well as aiding Obi-Wan and Ahsoka Tano, as well as the entire, you know, clone troopers. But he has also been integral in the toppling of several, you know, separatist leaders, like battle leaders,
as well as creating insurgencies, which was late. That was the run that I'm currently on for season 5 for the Clone Wars is literally where we see Saul Guerrera.
That wasn't his fault. That was Ahsoka Tano's. I mind you, he was.
But the initial setup came from Anakin. Anyway, literally, either way, this is the thing with the Clone Wars.
The point is, what I'm trying to say as Amy keeps deviating, is the fact that because we now have that story, now we have that information, now it's no longer him just coming in like, why don't you make me this? It's now, I'm a war veteran. I have saved most of you that are sitting in front of me. Mace, Yoda, you know, Kit Fisto, like there are so many people that are sitting in front of him that he has saved. Who?
Oh, I went Plo Koon.
Oh, Plo Koon. Like, and he's stating, I have earned my right, ultimately. Like from our perspective, we're looking at him and you're like, yo, we have seen him do all these things, which, mind you, again, I don't know if the Clone Wars series was in George Lucas's mind when he was writing that scene. Mm. But, like, kind of,
there has to be something to it, and I mean, even because, well, that's the also thing that Gendy put in theirs. Because really, if we're looking at within the timeline of it for that being released in 03, there was proof of that in there where he kept saving people, where mm-hmm. it made sense that like Anakin has earned his literal stripes and is like, make me a master. And when Yoda's like, nope, and you're just like. Part of me as a teenager was like,
no, it was Mace who said it first.
He goes, right.
And he goes, no, we will not be making it. And it's like, you feel like the weight of that scene a lot more heavier than before, because you now know, even with Gendy Tartakovsky's, you know, small mini series, that the implications are there that he has made a name for himself during the course of this war. He was not just a singular soldier who was put into the front lines. He was a general. He was somebody who led troopers. He led troops. He led
other Jedi, battles, you know, yeah. into war. And ain't it the way to go where you have this whole mentality of like, okay, in war, we're going to make you something. But after the war, you're going back to being nothing.
Yeah.
And it's insane how, again, how much there is so much more awareness, I guess, as you're older mm-hmm. to kind of see like, sadly, and the truth is out there is the fact that, you know, we've had opportunities in jobs where it's like, oh, we should have got the promotion or we should have got this. And it's like, no, we'll give it to someone else. And yeah. you're like, hold up.
You've done your time and you're like, listen, the least you could do is respect me and give me the cookie at the end yeah. of the day. Like, I've earned the pizza party. Give me my pizza party. And for him, it's like when we see him initially, and that's part of that take up when this happens, I was like, no, you don't deserve it.
Yeah.
But because I had no context to be able to see time and time and time and time again
mm-mm.
that he had been putting in the work that yeah. he had
that he had a Padawan too, like he yeah. had. I mean, even if you just take Jendi Tartakovsky's story in that mini couple episodes and you recognize that there was work that he put in to be somebody who can be relied upon and to take charge and to do the things that no one else would have or could have been able to do because of his ability. And the fact that he gets snuffed in that third film as a very matter of fact, no, we're not going to give it to you.
And by the way, you're going to spy for us.
Yeah.
And he's like, and part of you're like, listen, we know Palpatine's been twisting your ear, but it's also because he is a,
I mean, let's be honest.
He's a kid.
Let's be honest. The big winner here is Palpatine in terms of like the fact that, you know what? He needed a friend, and Palpatine, he was fitting them roles. I mean, for real, you're looking at you put somebody like Anakin, who from the very beginning they were wary of actually being even in the Order altogether, and then instead of handling it to where they were like, well, this volatile thing, this entity that could almost shift the balance of, you know, the Force to one side and ultimately create change, we should probably have him closer to us than keeping him out at arm's length.
Yeah.
And it's the masterful side and as well as the frustrating side of what George Lucas was building in that it made sense and it didn't make sense at the same time, both out of the universe and in universe for them to do what they did. But it ultimately led to all the steps that gave us the point that we were talking about earlier in the episode about that moment where he becomes Darth Vader.
Yeah. And I think also Palpatine simultaneously fed the missing Qui-Gon Jinn aspect of it. Like, because Qui-Gon was more of a father figure, even to little Annie, where Palpatine does that, I'm your friend.
It's a little of that.
But then what we really do see when it comes to the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, it's much more brother. It is, he's my older brother type of, as much as it's like, oh.
Well, I think it's more so of like an untapped well of knowledge for him, because it's almost like, and I do think you're hitting it a little on the head. I don't think it's a father figure because of the fact that he only knew Qui-Gon for like 3 days.
But his attachment issues are like hardcore.
But he was a kid. He was a kid.
Padme for how long? And he was like, you going to be my baby mama?
Either way, don't play. But I think the other side of it is that Palpatine was more of a well of knowledge as far as, and the permission giver for breaking the rules, kind of like with what Qui-Gon believed. Because even if we look at the Tales of the Jedi and the story that we see there with Qui-Gon and Count Dooku, which is a really great story, by the way, we see that Qui-Gon has always been a type of individual who is willing to break the rules so that he can still achieve the goal of being a good, I guess, I don't even want to say advocate, but just a good Force user, a good Jedi, ultimately. You know, his choices were always leaning a little too hard into the questionable areas for what the Jedi believe and follow,
but it always meant that he was trying to accomplish something that was for a bigger and better goal.
Which
and,
he's more force user, like we when you which again, Rebels and Clone Wars teaches you about force users or force wielders, right?
Force wielders.
Pardon me. Yeah. And
I mean technically both the same.
Yeah,
thing.
But wielder sounds kind of cool. But for force wielders that have technically no definitive line of they are Jedi or they are Sith. And it bears in mind the space of having a balance, a true balance where you understand your connection to the Force and it is suiting the needs of your community and you versus just being like, oh, everything is this way versus everything is that way, which like you don't really have an understanding of that in the prequels either. And then again, when you have expanded lore and you have access to expanded and expounding lore, you're able to see and go, oh, I can look at this original thing and it makes more sense.
Yeah. But like I was saying, like I feel like the focus for their relationship was more so like Palpatine was more so like, yeah, why wouldn't you be able to do this? Why can't you do this? It doesn't make any sense. You know, yeah, it is a dumb thing that they're doing this to you. Why shouldn't you be able to do this?
Yeah, so he's also dangling a chocolate chip cookie in front of a diabetic. Like, he's going to snatch that cookie out of the air
The thing is, you're looking at it. You're looking at it from a perspective of still, I guess, like a younger, because it feels a little skewed. Because, like, you're looking at it from however you're seeing it, but the way I see it, the Jedi Council set themselves up for failure in this instant because of the fact that they kept them at arm's length and even further. This volatile thing, this ultimately ticking time bomb that could ultimately blow up and create imbalance in the Force. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be something that you would want to absolutely invest all the great and good things about the Jedi in so that they can make sure that their ideals and their morals and their values are all aligned rather than keeping them at the extended length that they did, keeping him in the dark, which at multiple times, even during the Clone Wars series, Anakin constantly says, you know, why do they always keep me out of the loop? Why am I not informed? Why am I not? And then we get to this point where they ultimately ask him, mind you, yes, I know Palpatine is not a great guy. I get that. I'm not advocating for like, oh, you got to find the most evil guy out there and he'll give you what you want. Like, no, that's how gangs work. But in this particular instance, when you know that somebody you don't trust is feeding into the thing that you absolutely can't lose on your side of the team, then you need to start advocating for why they need to be a part of your team and their importance that they play in the overall grand scheme of things.
Well, and the other thing that you have to kind of also look at when we're devil's advocate in regards to Anakin, the fact that you said this is a ticking time bomb that's going to explode. If they had not been in a space of war, because that's the other thing that we see with the Jedi Council and the Jedi as a whole, is they are supposed to be keepers of the peace. Mm-hmm. They don't see themselves as warriors, even though they have knights and what have you. But having those resources suddenly go, oh, we have to pivot and we have to go fight wars. There isn't time or resources, which is what we see where all of the masters are out going on different commands and different missions across the galaxies where you can't. And I'm not making an excuse for this.
No, but I find the hypocrisy in the Jedi's mentality. Like, again, I've grown older.
You align as a Sith. It's okay. You're Slytherin when it comes to Harry Potter.
We're not talking about that. What I'm saying is, like, I recognize now that I'm older, the hypocrisy that the Jedi held. Mm-hmm. And again, this goes back to what I feel George Lucas had originally intended and was able to be fleshed out a little bit more with Dave Filoni, who is an absolute fan and lover of all things George Lucas, because George Lucas would not have actually given him his blessing to create this series if it didn't contain the passions and the drives that George Lucas originally held within the storyline.
Sure.
But again, I feel like the with everything now that we've seen, the implications that the Jedi Order were so hypocritical and even blind to not only the evils that are out there at their doorstep, but the evils that have
that were already
that have been
root,
created yeah. and have already established root within their order, mm-hmm. which is something we hear Yoda talk about later on, you know, in the film and as well as in the series, you know, that there are things within, you know, that they just weren't able to see.
But that I think in and of that line, like, it is very obvious to us as an outside perspective that, like, you're getting fleeced. You're getting fleeced. And they're all like, no one touches us. We're Jedis. Like, there is an all-powerful sense to the Jedi where they're, you know, stating that they are, you know, their loyalty is to the Republic. But really, in and of itself, their loyalty is to themselves.
Yeah, 100%. Self-preservation.
It's self-preservation in the bankroll.
Yeah. And it just so happens that the Sith are better at doing it.
Yeah.
And that was the big 100%. Problem, because then we get Order 66, which then happens, and nobody in the Jedi were even looking for it. You know, and I think that again goes to, like you said, you know,
it's perspective, us being older viewers and coming at it in a
older fans. I don't want to say But what was another perspective that you feel has changed since that first viewing? And I'm asking for one. I'm not asking for three.
No. So I'm going to say one, because it's the one that I really actually, in watching it most recently, I was like, oh, I get it. I don't have to agree with it, but I get it. The fact that Anakin was so deathly afraid of losing Padme. It wasn't just the baby or the babies, which he never technically found out. But the fact that everything else that he had been stripped away from him. His mother was dead. He knows there is a darkness inside of him that is consistently growing, and he can't fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And he is scared. The one person that brings him light, who is hidden entirely, who cannot live outside. Like, she has her own presence and personality, and she is her own person in her entirety. But he cannot walk literally hand in hand with her down the street. And the thought of losing her to anything, he is willing to risk everything.
Mm.
And it was such a moment for me in this viewing where I was like, oh, no, I actually get it. Like, it's no longer just whiny. It is the truth of mortality.
Yeah.
And the offer that if somebody, which... that was something that we don't even really kind of discuss, is how he understands childbirth, but he knows his mother died, period. And he's like, what is stopping my wife, the love of my life, from the same thing happening? Like, we know, how many people do we even know now who would literally, they'll give body parts and organs to people in the hope to not lose them.
Mm.
And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. And I think in that travesty of his anger fully absorbing him when they're on Mustafar and he hurts her and she's okay, but she is so beyond repair that it's easy for Palpatine to be like, let me just kick you over the edge.
Yeah, I mind you, that's I hear what you're saying and I agree with it. That's kind of more in the realm of, like, as you get older and you find people you care about and you know you can't live without. I totally get that.
That's that part of that story. But when I was like an 18-year-old kid, I was like, no. Like, okay, bro, like, you're screaming about a lady that you couldn't be with to begin with.
And even more so, like of course from that perspective, but also from the perspective of you have. And you have to look at it from this perspective to really kind of grasp the gravity of what this means. You have somebody who has, and again, going back through the Filoniverse, you have somebody who has literally wielded both sides of the Force, has been able to tame it, has found out and understood that at some point in time, somebody who used the Force was even able to stop death. Somebody who is so powerful that they could ultimately shift the balance that actually affects the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is still subject to the one thing that every other mortal person deals with, and that is death. You look at that and you're like, you have somebody who has practically the powers of a god,
minus the ability to save those you love. And I know it's been stated in the movie, and people have like, oh, you know, he even had the power to save those he loves. Like the whole Darth Plagueis the Wise, you know, Javier. Mm-hmm. Even in that spiel, like, yes, we've heard it before, but to kind of understand the gravity of that, in that he has the power to wield both sides of the Force in balance. And even with it, he is unable to find a way to not pretty much live out the prophetic outcome that he sees in his dreams of what will happen to Padme. And I find that phenomenally dumbfounding as to why it took me so long to kind of recognize that it was both sides that kept him from unlocking that. It wasn't just, you know, Palpatine like dangling it like a carrot on the end of a stick, but it was also the naivety and the ignorance, if you will, of the Jedi not being able to see past their hubris and their morality line, if you want to call it that, to even traverse into areas that could be, and not even stuff like, you know, to keep people from dying, but to even find a way where medically,
that's,
because we find out that that's a thing, you know, with other Force users.
Hey, we see you, Mandalorian.
But that actually brings me to another conspiracy theory that I found was absolutely mind-boggling. And I feel like it's perfect to kind of interject here, because before this, after I mentioned this, I got one last, you know, eye-opening moment as a now viewer. But there's another really great film theory about this, in that during the course of when Padme is giving birth and Anakin is simultaneously being constructed, so to speak, the theory is that Palpatine is actually force-siphoning her life force so that he can keep Anakin alive long enough to get him contained in the suit, which is why the droid, the med droid that's there, says she's lost the will to live. There's nothing wrong with her, but she is dying.
But she's dying.
And it's not even like, you look at somebody like Padme, who is a strong, independent,
and stubborn,
and stubborn woman who is a force to be reckoned with in the Star Wars universe. And we're not even talking about the Filoni-verse. We're just talking about everything we've seen her from Attack of the Clones, where she's fighting huge monsters on Geonosis. Well,
you can even talk about Phantom Menace when we first meet her, and she is like, no, I know I'm young and I am a young queen, but my people picked me and I'm here. She is Bella Ramsey in Game of Thrones. For what is it, the Bear Island, when she stands, I can't even remember, when she stands up at the council tables and she's like, y'all wimps. And she says it with much more creative things, but she's like, don't underestimate what I can do and who I am. Yeah. And that's something that Padme carries the entire way. And we see in Leia.
And I mentioned that because if someone who carries that fortitude and strength is sitting on this medical bed and suddenly they say, she's losing the will to live, that absolutely does not sound like the Padme that we have seen in the previous films. And it kind of makes a little bit more sense that it was all doing by Palpatine to remove her life force just so that he could allow Anakin to be fully encased and reliant on his medical machine, which is why you always see that Vader, because ultimately Vader, he cannot reside outside of that suit.
He can't live outside of the suit, yeah. Well, and that also makes sense too, because at that point, like, Obi-Wan hasn't told Padme that Anakin's dead. Like, she's not aware that he's gone. And the thing is,
all she knows is that he left him there on Mustafar.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no inkling that she knows, because she doesn't have the Force, that she knows that he is either injured or passing.
Yeah. And the thing is, all that happened is that he hurt her and they have to get the babies out.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, even when she's saying that you're breaking my heart, like, she still believes that there's an opportunity for redemption to Anakin, because she's always believed that. So it makes sense that Palpatine would be using draining and using that connection to take whatever life that she has to funnel it into somebody who has anger.
Yeah.
Because like we see in some later things where revenge is an inspiring reason to live. But when we get to Anakin, literally crisp Anakin kebab on Mustafar, he's like, he has lost, truly has lost the will to live. Like he's done. Mm. He's crispy. And it wouldn't make sense that suddenly he's willing to continue to live. And then when he flips on, literally when they turn him on, and Vader's there and he's asking about Padme, that's Anakin asking about Padme. That's not Vader. That, and the only thing that Palpatine could do to literally separate the two to create that, like, that hard definitive stop line is to be like, no, she dead. She dead.
Yeah. Well, and it's specifically, and we mentioned it earlier, in your anger, you killed her.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's subtle subtext to it as far as like the statement that he's mentioning, how, in what way of her anger, of his anger, you know, and is it in the anger that he is channeling with the Force that Palpatine uses to siphon it? Like there's a whole subtext to it that you could actually kind of break down and whatnot.
Well, and even Obi-Wan tells Anakin when they go farther in to actually have their battle on Mustafar, he says that she's alive and she's okay, but they need to get her help.
Yeah.
And so the last thing that Anakin has recognizes before he becomes Vader is that Padme is okay. And the thing is that even in his anger, you think, then those in that moment when he became a shish kebab, his wife,
he didn't become a shish kebab.
He became an over toasted marshmallow. Okay, let's be honest.
He was baking like a toasted cheeser.
that's such a good line. But the last thing that he remembers while he's laying there, literally catching fire, is that he hurt his wife, but she's still alive, and he knows from a literal history of it that Obi-Wan will do anything and everything to protect Padme and make sure that she's okay.
Yeah.
Like, so it makes no sense that coming out of the haze, like it makes sense coming out of the haze, Anakin's like, is she okay still?
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing that he remembers before he got literally sucked into his rage and got his legs chopped off.
So the last thing I want to mention, and the last thing I think I as far as like, And I'll give you one last opportunity to give you yours. That way we each have an opportunity. We have two opportunities. But one of the last things I recognized about this particular viewing now as an older fan was the fact that, and I actually love this because it just adds more to not only the performance of Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, but kind of the implications of it after the fact, again, with Rebels and with, you know, with everything we've seen in Clone Wars and Rebels and even the Obi-Wan series. Mm-hmm. I love, and you've mentioned it several times in very creative ways about the time when, you know, when Anakin is unable to make that jump because, as everyone knows, Obi-Wan had the high ground.
Winnie the Pooh.
What?
So Christopher Robin, there's Christopher Robin.
Oh my God. No.
Yes. We're not.
Anyway,
it's so,
good. The point is, what I'm trying to say is, I need Spencer. As I'm trying to say, so in that moment after Anakin tries to do, you know, the flip, and by the way, I don't know if I've mentioned, but there is actually a name for the moveset that Obi-Wan does in that moment, where it's a very, very unique moveset. And I forget the name of it, but it's actually one that is that the Jedi don't really use because of how it could be lethal. But it's an actual moveset. And I forget the name of it offhand. But what I want to say is one of the things that I've learned or that I've realized now as an older fan is when, as you've so stated, Anakin is crisping up, and Obi-Wan is looking down at him, the first thing that Obi-Wan tells him, he goes, I loved you, Anakin. You were my brother. And the fact is, when you look back at the Jedi Order, they weren't allowed to love.
Mm-hmm.
That is Obi-Wan stating that this entire time, and you could spin it however you want as far as, you know, fanfics or whatever, you know, shipping, whatever. But the fact is like,
he loved him.
He loved him. And even that wasn't allowed. And you look at everything that has gone on in the Clone Wars and how Obi-Wan has had the opportunity to run away with certain people or to have, you know, an actual life outside of the Jedi Order with other people. And obviously those stories have yet to be explored because I am pretty sure there's somebody out there who will make it or has made it. But in spite of all this, the one person that he has been able to rely on, the one person who has been behind him and beside him the entire time, the one person who has ultimately been that brother, is literally in front of him dying. And the first thing that Obi-Wan tells him is, you know, that this entire time he goes, I loved you. Like, I'm willing to state this as a break to my oath as a Jedi, because I want you to know that you meant that much to me, that I was willing, I have been willing to break my own oath to the Jedi Order because you mean that much to me. And you realize, like, the implications of that is that Obi-Wan has been operating for almost the entirety of their relationship outside of what the Jedi Order has permitted him to, or has ordered him to follow, which means it does make him more of the Qui-Gon type leader. But it also states that there is a little bit of gray area to Obi-Wan, and which opens the door to a lot of other types of storylines that could have been. But it's like the power and the fact that the first thing he tells him is like, you idiot, I've loved you this entire time. I would have followed you to the end to figure out how to get this fixed, how to save Padme. I would, you know, you were supposed to do X, Y, and Z, but before you were supposed to, you know, save the Jedi, and before you were supposed to, you know, bring balance to the Force and all this, I wanted you to know that I loved you.
Well, and the other thing is that he says he was supposed to bring balance, not destroy it. He never says you were supposed to save the Jedi. He never mm-hmm. says you were supposed to become Sith. He just says you were supposed to bring balance.
Yep.
And the thing is, balance is weight. Balance is the middle. And if the thing that needed to change, which we know the Jedi Council needed change,
yeah.
he was a representation of that change that could have continued to bring balance.
Again, if the Jedi Order had brought him in closer and actually gave him an opportunity to be a part of that, again, that's the beauty and masterfulness, however, at the same time, frustrating genius of George Lucas for this story, because it's like, it makes sense. And it doesn't make sense at the same time. And it's like, you idiots. Like, this guy has been the crux of the entire future for however the Force is going to be managed in the future. And you guys kept him on the outside door, trying to always constantly be, you know, asking to get into the clubhouse. And you're like, nah, why don't you do this instead?
Yeah. I mean, like, it comes so much more of an understanding. Like, again, Filoni's with George's blessing, he has not pursued anything without George's blessing. You see that there were so many doors that were left open to give more roundedness to these characters, to give more depth, to give more hope, and to give more meaning, so that when you see that move that happens, or if you look at the Duel of the Fates and we get to the Twin Sun episode in Rebels, which has so much more bearing, or even when you move over into the Obi-Wan series, which I literally...
Well, and even before that, I mean, when you start getting... never mind, go ahead, because again, I will trail off on so much more of that lore, because the greatest thing that the Rebels series has ever done is given us more understanding of the mentality and the pursuit of understanding on people who've loved him, loved Vader / Anakin in the era that he was Anakin Skywalker rather than Darth Vader. But go ahead, keep going. Sorry.
No, yeah, I was about done. It's just, there is now so much more lore that has canon to it, that has legs. And it's brilliant to see and to be able to have access to now.
Okay, last one. Do you have one last kind of grown up awareness kind of aspect on the film, or
yeah, well, and this is kind of slightly outside, just a little bit outside the film, but it is pertaining to the film. When originally I saw this, everybody had hate for Hayden Christensen. Like it was hate. It wasn't like, this wasn't Robert Pattinson Twilight shenanigans. Mm. This was so deep seated and so much anger that had drove him so far into every possible hole that this man literally, I didn't know for a good long while if he was still alive. And then randomly I'd see like, oh, Hayden Christensen's still around. And I'm like,
what about, he did movies. I mean, yeah. Jumper and Awake. Like, I saw him in movies. I don't know about you. No, like, I still followed the man's career.
I didn't. And I think that was the thing that finally, and that somebody has started saying that he's getting his flowers. And the fact is that he was always Anakin. Like, he was the Anakin that became Darth Vader. He was the one that we wanted to see, the cocky, the brash, the control, the lack thereof control, the passion that came with Anakin. And excuse me. And it's really like, it's come to a head to be able to see, especially in the last, with the resurgence of Filoni, to find out that he is still so passionately in love with Star Wars, even when a large swath of the Star Wars community at that time literally was gunning to hurt him, that he carries so much respect, so much love, so much tenderness. And like when he was coming back for Obi-Wan, which what I was going to say was, after I watched Revenge of the Sith, I was like, I wonder how close along the lines Obi-Wan actually is to Revenge of the Sith. Like, where can I watch it? How close in is it to feel vibe?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, oh my gosh, it was a long time between that third movie and this. And it picks up just like it doesn't feel like it's that far off.
Because isn't it like 7 years later?
So it's supposed, see, and this is the problem. He, at one point, Obi-Wan meets Tiny Princess Leia and says, gives her a blaster holster, and she goes, but there's no gun in it. And he goes, I wouldn't give a blaster to a 10-year-old. Child is not 10. She is maybe at best a very going on 7, going on 8, give, but she's 10. Not 10.
Yeah.
Which makes more sense kind of in the way that this is structured. And that's the only one big critique that I have about the Obi-Wan series, because Hayden...
Oh, it is listed as 10 years after.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 10, but literally when you see Leia versus Luke, there literally she looks like she's like a 7, maybe 8-year-old. She's not a 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And that is no downplay to this actress. She's fantastic. But the big thing that you see that you come to find out is that Hayden went back and watched all the Clone Wars in prep for this. And then as soon as he got on to like... Ewan and Hayden were like, they talk about the camaraderie, that they were brothers, that this was like, this is them. And you get that.
Yeah, they did a vignette, a small vignette of it on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's about an hour long. It's really good.
Well, no, I was just thinking of the commercial they did when they were showing them viewing on the big screen.
Yeah, but. And you come to find out, like, they've followed each other and supported each other, and it matches the energy that's in the Clone Wars, and it makes so much more sense when you watch it in juxtaposition with Revenge of the Sith, because you're seeing it carry through.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of flashback sequences where there's one and they're actually doing their training at the temple on Coruscant, and he's a knight and he's in his outfit from Clone Wars and he doesn't have his braid, and they're going at it, and Ewan has an aside and he says, man, they've got all these tracking dots on my face to de-age me. And he goes, and Hayden looks like he hasn't missed a day. Mm-hmm. Like it's just Anakin stepping back into it.
Yeah.
And then when we get the moment in the Ahsoka series where we see him and he's got the same energy and it's still the Clone Wars. Hayden has earned.
Which, mind you, in that series, you have Hayden actually wearing the outfit that his Clone Wars character wore, which you've never seen Anakin in the Ahsoka series. When they do that flashback where Ahsoka's in that space in between, and they go back to like when she was younger and they were in the Clone Wars, You never see
Anakin.
He's
wearing his armor.
He's wearing his armor, yeah. The one that he wears in the series.
Yeah, so. Because in Obi-Wan, he's wearing the black overlay robes.
Mm.
But he's not wearing the armor. But yeah, again, we're finally getting an opportunity for Hayden to get his flowers, and it's something that when we talk about stripes, we talked about it earlier in the episode. This is finally the time that Anakin has really gotten and been acknowledged by the council, air quotes, the fandom, that he is a Jedi master and always has been.
Well, and even more so than that, and I believe, I don't know if it was this year's Star Wars celebration or the previous, but there's a story out there about how when Hayden Christensen came back to the fold, the first thing he told Matt Lanter, who was the voice of Anakin, was, thanks for, what is it that he said? Thanks for keeping the story alive, or thanks for, it was an actual interview that he had said. Let me see if I could find it. Hold on one sec. Yeah, what he said was, he said, thanks for keeping Star Wars alive. The first time he met him, which is incredible, because then you're looking at it now that Hayden isn't just a member of the cast for the film. He is an avid fan. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, when he came back into the fold and he watched those episodes, like, knowing he did the work, like, because obviously the series has been around for, you know, we're looking at 2008. So at least
almost
13 years. No, yeah,
it's going to be 20 years. 30 years.
No, it's about
it's 2008. And it's 2025.
So it's 17 years.
Yeah, so it's almost, so we're getting
so with that amount of time, which is still crazy because you haven't finished it, but he was able to finish it in, you know, the amount of time that he had watching it. And watching all seasons of that, like, the man cares about what has already been set as far as his character's arc, and recognizing that opportunity to create that persona that's been portrayed in the series and be able to put it on screen, to carry that love over, to carry that heart, you know, even as you mentioned, like with the Obi-Wan series, like the fact that we get that culminating scene towards the tail end. And I think you and I had talked about this before off air, about how, you know, when Vader's helmet cracks and you see Anakin underneath it, and Obi-Wan is just at this point, like, he is uber apologetic of, like, you know, I'm sorry, Anakin, I failed you. And I think you're the one who told me it best. What was the line that he says?
Yeah. Darth Vader says, and initially in the series, he says, I am not your failure, Obi-Wan. But at one point, he also has told him previously in the first episode, he says, I am what you made me to Obi-Wan. And then when we get to that final sequence where we come to the resolve of Obi-Wan sobbing and apologizing.
Which, mind you, that I am what you made me was done in the voice of James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Or the AI voice, however. But it was in that original Darth Vader voice. Yeah. And then when you get to this one, it's the
overlay. Yeah, it's the lapse of the two, which is great audio engineering.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you hear him say, I am not your failure, Obi-Wan. You did not kill Anakin. Anakin, I killed Anakin. And it's that, and in that moment, it is so like, but it's the acknowledgement there,
and it's the closure. It's
for
everything,
both of them, really, when you think about it.
Like, I mean, to an extent, Darth, because ultimately
Darth Vader just
Anakin slash Darth Vader is still, there's still so much more story for him as the tale goes on, because he still has the situations that come up with in Rebels with Ahsoka. And which is another great opportunity to kind of dive into, which they have in the Ahsoka series.
Vader down when we get to comic books.
Yeah, Vader down, and but all that's, mind you, I don't know if they're going to do anything with that. But the fact is like creating that type of closure, even for these two performers, to know that their story has a sense of like fluidity and closure and continuity to it, to where you have Obi-Wan, who is now able to create that bridged story to becoming what Qui-Gon had originally intended him to learn at the end of Revenge of the Sith, bringing it back full circle, and being able to create that opportunity for not only us to see Qui-Gon again, aka Liam Neeson, but to also that was a great cameo. But to also figure out when and where in the time frame he begins to learn this ability, so that way we see them in the afterlife, and everything that comes about in episode 4, 5, and 6 makes sense. So,
yeah, and shout out to Deborah Chow, who was the director for the Obi-Wan series. She does not get enough love for the work that she did in there. And again, other unsung heroes are the men and women that continue to put out all of this amazing Star Wars lore, Star Wars series. And it does is continue to keep growing and feeding the beautiful, beautiful beast that is the Star Wars fandom.
Absolutely. Well, that about wraps up our awesome episode on May the 4th, Star Wars Day, where we talk about Revenge of the Sith, where we talk about everything Star Wars, but still, there was a focus on Revenge of the Sith somewhere there. Thanks for hanging out with us. We had a great show, and we're glad you were able to be a part of it. Again, you can check us out over at our website at filmphilosophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedies, movies about Star Wars shows, Star Wars movies, Star Wars comics, and Star Trek, but mostly Star Wars. You can head on over to our website and find all of those great episodes, listen to them, and over at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever you are at social media, is over at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Filmphilosophy101. You can also catch us at Blue Sky at filmphilosopherspodcast.bluesky. Over at Instagram, we also post all of our other great content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jay on Scene, which can be found, and she can say it now.
Yes, it can be found the only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And if, again, you're like, Amy, there's nothing posted here, I'm sorry, guys. It is in the episode.
She's working on it.
I have to see. She has access now. I can rebuild. I have the power.
Yep. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for Zara the Filmphilosopher and give us a like or subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you see Revenge of the Sith this year? Did you watch any of Star Wars movies this year? And what are you doing for Star Wars Day? We want to know. Let us know in the towel section down below. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yes, please.
We hope that your Star Wars Day is so much full of blue milk and Twi'lek dancing. And we do hope that you have a phenomenal day. So from all of us here at the Filmphilosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm managing intern Amy.
Managing intern Amy?
I don't know what we're doing. May the 4th be with you.
Class dismissed, and may the 4th be with you.